From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm The Miracle Hunter. Hey everyone, I am back from Mexico. I was just there filming new episodes of the Explore series for EWTN Television, and also filming for the new Eucharistic Miracles mini-series that will be airing in July of next year. We finished the final stop of that Eucharistic Miracles mini-series that was in Tichla in Mexico, a very poor and run-down and small town there in Mexico, but home of one of the greatest Eucharistic miracles in history. So that was amazing to do that long drive through that beautiful country and end up at that church and do our interviews, and we had access to film the incredible Eucharistic miracle of Tichla. Of course, we stopped by my favorite Marian shrine in the entire world, and that is La Basilica, the Basilica of Our Lady of Guadalupe as well. And also we traveled to Puebla to see Blessed San Sebastian de Aparicio, and that is an incorruptible saint. And we have Tlaxcala, which was the site of San Miguel de Milagros, the site of Saint Michael the Archangel, an apparition in the 1600s. Absolutely amazing. We were there during the feast day celebrations, the novena, as it led up, and there were thousands upon thousands of people there celebrating in great festivity that greatest of all archangels and my patron saint, St. Michael. So check those out next year. Those will be available on Explore with the Miracle Hunter. So wonderful to be there, and even better to be back home. And on today's program, we've got a great show for you today. We'll be talking about Elizabeth Ann Seton, who's the very first of the Americans or people born in what became the United States to be recognized as a saint. We'll be also talking about Saint Therese of Lisieux with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Shower of Heavenly Roses. We'll be talking about that in the forthcoming program on EWTN called Miracles of Roses. And check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's the program related to Our Lady of Lowe. It's a little known but highly approved Marian apparition from 1664. Shepherdess Benedicta Rencurel received visions of Mary on one day and for every day on the rest of her life. So absolutely amazing. Check that one out. Explore Lowe. That'll be airing tonight on EWTN. And on 365 Days with Mary, we'll be talking about that later in the program for October 7th. Today, we've got Our Lady of Atocha in Spain from the 8th century. And the might-be saint of the day is Blessed John Huneau from a feast day of October 7th from France. And the question of the week: what happens when a person receives an intercessory miracle, but they have prayed to multiple saints? We'll try to answer that question later in the program. People who tune into this show know that I've been gone for a few weeks. I've been traveling the world, as I like to do. And of course, there was big miracle news that I didn't get to report related to St. Januarius. So just most people who are tuned into St. Januarius, San Gennaro in Italy, they know this news that happened just a few weeks ago. In the announcement that the blood of St. Januarius, the patron saint of Naples, had liquefied at the start of the Mass at the Naples Cathedral. And so it again liquefied in Naples a few weeks ago on September 19th. And so the abbot of the Chapel of the Treasury of the Naples Cathedral announced that we have taken from the safe the reliquary with the blood of our patron saint, which immediately completely liquefied. And for those people who don't know that, on every feast day of St. Januarius on September 19th, there's a big celebration. I've been there in person filming with EWTN, and I've seen this with my own two eyes. It's an entirely packed cathedral. And on his feast day, each and every year, we see the blood of the 3rd century bishop martyr in an ampule or glass reliquary. It liquefies in front of everybody's eyes, and it does that every single year, except on the years that it doesn't. And on the years that it doesn't, we see the eruption of Mount Vesuvius or an earthquake or a financial collapse or coronavirus. So those people who are there gathered for that Mass let out a huge cheer, bigger than any game-winning touchdown of a college football game, because that spells good times ahead for the people of Naples. It's an absolutely amazing phenomenon. Check out Explore Naples, which is my program on EWTN, where I talk about this incredible phenomena of St. Januarius. But like clockwork, or usually like clockwork, his blood liquefied this past year as well. So absolutely amazing. So let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize of the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com. And so this week we're talking about Elizabeth Ann Seton, the first American-born saint. And so the question for you today is, who was the second American-born saint? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the winner of the prize this week. And we need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Becca Corbell from the St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine about the brand new museum that has been launched to honor this first American saint. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show and also to EWTN television know that I love featuring the lives of saints and American saints on these programs. And I think it's so important to know that sainthood isn't something that happened centuries ago in a far-off place across the ocean, perhaps in Europe or otherwise. Actually, there are saints right here from the United States. And the very first person to be canonized who was born in what would become the United States is Elizabeth Ann Seton. That's the answer to a trivia question you might be familiar with on this show anyway. And she was a religious sister in the United States and was the founder of the country's parochial school system. And she had a great impact on the United States in general and on Catholicism here in the United States. We're so excited because there's a shrine, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton National Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland, and they have a great new offering, which is a museum has now opened up on its location. So I encourage people to check that one out. We're so excited to be joined today by Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs from that National Shrine of Elizabeth Ann Seton. Welcome to the program today, Becca.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's exciting to point out American saints, and we're excited that there's a new museum there at your shrine, and I encourage people to check that one out. And, of course, Elizabeth Ann Seton is the answer to that trivia question, who was the first American-born saint? And I think that many people might know the name, especially with her role in the school systems, but who was the woman, Elizabeth Ann Seton?
Oh, my goodness. Well, many people know kind of the buzzwords. She was a wife. She was a mother. She was a convert. She was a religious sister, foundress, widow. But she was so much more than that. She really was a vivacious woman that grew up in a really exciting time in this country. Like you mentioned, she was born in 1774 in what would become the United States and lived through all of the revolution, but then just really an exciting time for American Catholicism as well. We were getting our bearings in this country. We were starting to get organized. We had a bishop of the United States at the time, and she just was a really passionate, strong-willed woman that got a lot of things done by just saying yes to the little things, the daily decisions that were kind of placed in front of her. So we're hoping that this new museum will kind of flesh her out a little bit more and show people her personality, her love of her children, her love for teaching. All kinds of things. Who isn't she?
Wonderful. No, that's an exciting thing when we talk about the saints from the United States. I think that's important that people know the role that these great men and women in the Catholic Church have had here, even in the United States. And mm-hmm. when we talk about Elizabeth Ann Seton, of course, we talk about her, someone living from 1774 to 1821. So that is some time ago now. But of course, with the emphasis on education and the importance of education still here in the United States and around the world, we can point to her as a very important modern saint. How do you see Elizabeth Ann Seton as a saint for modern times?
She she's obviously an example for women, especially in navigating our desire to volunteer for the church, to work for the church, obviously as a wife and a mother. But the thing that has really been striking me recently, and as we've built this new museum, is as a Eucharistic person. She ended up converting because of her love of Christ in the Eucharist. And isn't that just a call for all of us? We all are familiar with the famous Pew study that so many Catholics are unsure of their belief or just straight don't believe in the Eucharist and the true presence there. And Mother Seton, that once she discovered that in the Catholic faith, that drove her entire life, and it drove the way that she taught and the way that she made decisions and the way that she ended up facing eternity. She even brought her sickbed down so that she could see the chapel and see the tabernacle so that she could join eternity and find that perfect union in Christ with him in the Eucharist and then immediately after in eternity. And that has just been really inspiring me lately, and I hope the church, as we go into this Eucharistic revival, and hopefully flourish more as a Eucharistic people.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs at the National Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And as we reflect on some of the new developments on the shrine, let's first paint the picture. For those people who have not yet visited your shrine, if they were to go on a pilgrimage, perhaps, what are the basics of what they would encounter at the shrine?
Well, the very basic, we would want you to see her basilica. So if you have no time at all, we would want you to see the basilica where she's entombed, visit her relics, pray with her relics, leave your intentions there at her altar. We keep all the intentions that visitors, people mail us at Mother Seton's altar for a full year, and we celebrate every Mass that we have here for those intentions. So at the very bare minimum, we would want you to see that, see where she is and pray with her. But we have a lot of other things. We have, as you mentioned, a beautiful new museum with a lot of artifacts of Mother Seton's, things from her life, her family, the school that she started here. We actually have the two historic homes that she lived in here in Emmitsburg, where she first started the Sisters of Charity, the first women congregation in the United States. And then where she started the school, St. Joseph's Academy and Free School, is here on our property. It's not 100 yards away from the museums. It's a very easy, accessible. We do historic homes tours every day where you can go inside those houses. And then on Fridays and Saturdays, they really come to life with our Living History program. And that is where you can go back in time and meet the sisters running the school. And the students, the girls that went here, they're portraying actual students that went here 200 years ago. Wow. And the school just comes to life like it was in Mother Seton's time. So you'll easily walk in and interrupt a lesson, a history, an art, a German lesson, and the students will show you around the academy and explain how they came to the school and maybe even where they went on to after. It's amazing. We also have two special exhibits that will rotate with content that's new every year. And then, of course, like every good Catholic shrine, we have a gift shop as well. So there's plenty to see and do here to make a really nice visit. Oh, we also have Mass and Adoration as well, every day but Saturday. So the sacraments, not only is Mother Seton in the Basilica, but the sacraments are alive and well in the Basilica as well.
Wonderful. We're talking today with Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs at the Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And we're so excited that this museum is coming to life, that people can come and see it now, and it's available. How long did this project, how long has the museum project been going on, and what motivated the project in the first place?
Well, it has been a glimmer in many of our eyes for several years. For those that have come to the shrine before, we did have a museum that was started in the 80s on the lower level, kind of in the basement of the shrine itself. And it became increasingly difficult to give directions to get people upstairs to the basilica, not to mention if anyone has mobility concerns or anything like that. So we had always dreamed of moving upstairs and being a one-level experience. So from the minute you get out of your car, there are no steps, nothing to hinder the experience. the Daughters of Charity that live here at the Shrine, they so graciously allowed us to move into what was their main entrance for their provincial house when the building was first built. And now we're a completely one-level, easy experience that my favorite thing is that the museum where you're seeing Mother Seed's artifacts, her First Communion rosary, the bonnet that she wore as a habit, and then you immediately flow right into where she's entombed. So it feels like her whole life was leading up to the Basilica, to her canonization, to her glory in heaven. It just is a much more cohesive experience. So we're glad to finally see that happen.
Wonderful. Well, we've been talking today with Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs. For people who visit this shrine and this museum, what's your hope that they come away with after this experience?
Sure. My hope is that not only do they get to know Elizabeth Ann Seton in a more personal way, but that they see that she could do it. And so sainthood really is possible for all of us. She had immense challenges, some really dark times in her life, as so many of us do. And she always had her eye on heaven. She had her eye on God the Father and used that as a compass to make her decisions. And that is something that is more doable than we think sometimes. And so I would love for people to be inspired by her and then take what they've learned from her and start adapting it into their daily life as well. We need more American saints. And that's on us. That's on the Americans of today to be more American saints.
Very well put. And for people who want to make a pilgrimage to your shrine and perhaps find out more, is there a website or a phone number that people can connect to?
There is, conveniently, both. So the website is www.setonshrine.org, SETONshrine.org. And our phone number is 301-447-6606.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs at the Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine, for joining us today, for telling us a little bit about this great saint, and for highlighting this brand new museum that's available now at the Shrine. I encourage everybody to go and check that one out. Thanks so much, Becca, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you. Thank you.
God bless. That was Becca Corbell from the Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. I encourage people to check that one out, not only to see that beautiful basilica that's there, but also the brand new museum that's just been released. I've posted some notes on my Facebook page and other social media, so you can see some videos of this brand new museum that's just been unveiled. So I encourage people to check that out. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And so when I give a talk, I travel around the country, I give maybe 20 talks a year to different Catholic events, shrines, different programs, different parishes, and I talk about miracles. And I always leave some room at the end of the presentation to do some question and answer. And I did that recently. I gave a recent talk, and it was fun to hear what people were asking about. And one of the good questions, we were talking about sainthood causes in the presentation, and the question was, what happens when a person receives an intercessory miracle, but they have prayed to multiple saints? How do they know who worked the miracle? So that's a great question. And when we talk about healing miracles used for the canonization of saints, of course, we're talking about these serious conditions that are not liable to go on their own. It must be an instantaneous, complete, and lasting cure. And there can be no medical treatment that relates to the cure. So that's how they determined whether it was a miracle or not. Using that criteria, the Lambertini criteria, which worth noting, it's the same criteria that they use at Lourdes in the validation of those miracles of people who go in the healing waters there at that apparition site. But when we talk about the healing miracles used for sainthood causes, the same criteria is in play.
But what's very interesting is they also must do a theological analysis to make sure that there was only one intercessor. So you might imagine that if you had some sort of a miracle and you prayed to St. Padre Pio and St. Therese and also a might-be saint, when you presented that to your bishop or to the cause or to Rome and said, I've got a miracle here, they might say, well, congratulations on your miracle. That's wonderful. However, we don't know who worked the miracle. It's unclear. So that would not be a miracle that's used for canonization. So I always say, you know, pray to all your friends, the saints, hoping, you know, that in case somebody might intercede. But if you're actually looking to have a miracle that's usable in a canonization cause, you have to just direct your prayers and everybody around you, if you're asking for prayers, have them go through the intercession of just one future saint. So thanks for your question, and that it's a good one, and it has a very clear answer, which is you must pray to one singular saint in order for that to count potentially for a miracle used for a canonization or beatification. So thanks for your question. If you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it relates exactly to that date in the calendar year. You all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, October 7th, we might call this Queen of the Rosary. That might be the big title for today, but Our Lady of Atocha in Spain in the 8th century is the one that is celebrated in Spain. And tradition says in the year 720, there was a mayor of Madrid nobleman, Gracian Ramirez, who with his wife and two daughters was removed before the Muslim invasion. And there was an ancient shrine on the outskirts of the town containing a venerated image of Our Lady, to whom the Madrid's mayor was very devoted. The town was Muslim, so Gracian made furtive visits to this shrine, and one time he saw that the image was gone, and he went in search, and he began to build a new sanctuary on that spot, and the Muslims attacked the construction, and Gracian preemptively took the lives of his family, and the Muslims were repelled by a great light, and the family of Gracian came back to life through the intercession of the Virgin of Atocha. So that is the very wild story of Our Lady of Atocha in Spain in the 8th century. It's a fascinating devotion. And if you have devotion to any of these other Marian titles, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com to find out more information about these or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions that are around the world. You can also pick up the book. You can go to the website, 365dayswithmary.com, or you can join the Facebook page where there are 10,000 followers of people who get various Marian titles for each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We do this every week where we talk about people on the path to sainthood and the search for canonization miracles. And this lines up with my television series that airs on Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Central Time on EWTN Television, and my book, They Might Be Saints, which is out from EWTNRC.com. And so there was a recent story that there was a new miracle that the Vatican will be approving related to the friend of St. John Bosco. Now, the miracle was indeed deemed, quote-unquote, a true miracle, but it could lead to the canonization of Blessed Alamo, Ayamano, a friend of St. John Bosco. So on September 13th, 2023, the Consulate of Missionaries working in Africa received news from the Vatican that a miracle attributed to the intercession of their founder, Blessed Joseph Alamano, was deemed a true miracle. And so, of course, until the Vatican makes an official pronouncement, we don't know for sure. But the Catholic Information Service of Africa explained that there has been a documented case of a miracle that will likely lead to the canonization of Blessed Alamano, who is a friend of St. John Bosco in Italy. And according to Father Francesco Pavese, Brother Blessed Alemano wanted to imitate St. John Bosco and frequently went to him for confession, and Joseph Alemano finished elementary school and entered the Salesian Oratory at Valdolco, and his regular confessor was Don Bosco himself. And after completing 4 years of intermediate school at the Oratorio, he felt called to the diocesan priesthood, and he left Valdolco for the diocesan cemetery in Torino. And Don Bosco perhaps had thought that Alemano would enter his own congregation and gently asked him, "You told him you hurt my feelings. You left without saying goodbye." And Alemano responded, "I didn't have the nerve." He felt great affection for Don Bosco for his whole life and did not want to displease him. So he went on to work primarily in Africa, and it is hoped that this miracle will pave the way for Blessed Alemano's canonization. And so we'll find out soon if, in fact, this miracle that's being reported is the one used for the canonization of Blessed Alemano, this friend of St. John Bosco. Let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. We do this every week where we talk about the person on the pathhood, whether it's a path to sainthood, whether it's a servant of God, a venerable, a blessed, before they have all their miracles and they're declared a saint by Rome. And so for today, we've got Blessed Jean Uno from France, and whose feast day is October 7th. And he was a priest in the Diocese of Seine in France, and he was imprisoned on a ship in the harbor of Rochefort in France, and he was left to die during the anti-Catholic persecutions of the French Revolution. And he is considered to be one of the martyrs of the hulks of Rochefort. And he was born in 1742 on September 21st in France, and he died on October 7th in 1794 aboard this prison ship in Rochefort in Charente-Maritime in France. And he was declared venerable in 1994 by Pope John Paul II, and he was declared blessed by Pope John Paul II in 1995. And with one more miracle, Blessed Jean Uno will be declared a saint. And for those people who are interested in the television series They Might Be Saints, it airs every week at 8 a.m. Central Time on EWTN. This past week, we had a brand new episode of Venerable Mary Therese Dujic of Chicago. It was a very well-received episode, and you'll be able to see that one again or go to EWTNRC.com to purchase the DVD. And for next week, there'll be a new episode of They Might Be Saints as well, every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Central Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about St. Thérèse of Lisieux in this 150th anniversary of her birth, and her feast day was just this week. We'll be talking with Elizabeth Ficicelli about the shower of heavenly roses. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who follow the Catholic blogosphere and in the articles that are banding about on the internet these days see that St. Thérèse has been getting a lot of attention. Perhaps that is because it is the 150th anniversary of her birth this year, and also it is has been her feast day this past week. So we're so excited to shine the light on the great saint, St. Thérèse of Lisieux, the little flower, as she's known. And people who are tuned into this show know that coming up, perhaps next month, we'll see the new program called Miracles of Roses, which is a program which highlights some of the great intercessions in modern times of St. Thérèse. We know the tradition, at least, that there are roses or things related to roses that pop up for people that give a sign of a prayed-for miracle that might be happening. And so one of the featured guests in that show, interview subject, is Elizabeth Ficicelli. She's the author of Shower of Heavenly Roses and an expert on St. Thérèse and her life. We welcome back to the program today, Elizabeth Ficicelli.
Hi, Michael. It's always a pleasure to be with you and certainly to talk about one of my spiritual girlfriends, Thérèse of Lisieux.
Yeah, I know she's one of your favorites, and she is considered to be one of the most popular modern saints. We talk about Padre Pio and Saint Therese, perhaps as two of the great miracle workers that we have as intercessors in our Catholic Church. So many people have a great love and devotion for Saint Therese. And for the program that you worked on with me, Miracles of Roses, we had the benefit of traveling around the country to Darien, Illinois, the National Shrine, or also the National Basilica there in San Antonio, or in Royal Oak, Michigan, three of these major shrines that are dedicated to the Little Flower. So it's a great thing to see devotion to St. Therese. And for people who don't know the story of St. Therese, and many people do, let's just dial it back a little bit. Who was this great saint, St. Therese?
Well, St. Therese comes from a very unique family, and we're kind of going back into like the mid-1800s in France. Her family, which consisted of her parents, and she was the youngest then of five children, all of these, they were all girls, and they all would end up in religious life. Her parents have been canonized. Therese has been canonized, and there's a case open for one of the sisters, Leone. So you right off the bat, you're in a remarkable Catholic family. And I think some of this remarkable part of their Catholic faith was they were very united. But I think you appreciate it when you look at the backdrop of what was going on in France at that time. And there was a lot of secularism. So that was definitely putting pressure on Catholics. And then even among Catholicism, there was that skewed notion. At the time, it was called Jansenism. And it's really recognized as a heresy. But they really were seeing God as a very harsh, mean judge who was, you know, counting all the sins and everything. They did not see him as the merciful father that Faustina would present later on. So, you know, you kind of have this background, and this is where Therese would grow up. She was impacted by many things in her life, certainly her father's doting love on her, which was a positive, and yet her mother's death when Therese was very young, that would have a very negative effect on Therese, as would the second abandonment of a mother figure in her life when her sister Pauline, an older sister, gets called to the convent. Therese goes through that loss as well. So she deals with some joyful, you know, things as a child, but then she deals with very, very severe losses in her life emotionally. She deals with illness. She's got some illness, even at one point, almost succumbing to that illness. So she's had challenges right from the get-go, but she is a spunky, on fire, young person, bold, probably because youngest of five, you know, that kind of helps. But also because she had this different view of God from the get-go. I think it was influenced by her father, who loved her so much and treated her like his little queen and so forth. He was such a great loving father on earth for Therese. And she was able to see God then as that loving heavenly father, which people of her time were not seeing. So very, very unique perspective. Oh, we could go on forever. I know we only have 15 minutes. There's so much to her story, how she ends up in the Carmel. So I'll let you, you know, direct what parts of her story, but she's a fabulous saint, super accessible, super easy to read. She will, once you embrace her, she will be in your life for good, guiding you, helping you. And that's why I think she's one of the most accessible, as you know, and popular saints, as you said, Michael, just a great saint, great treasure of our Catholic Church.
Absolutely. We're talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Shower of Heavenly Roses. And we're talking today about, of course, St. Therese of Lisieux. And so when we look at St. Therese, of course, everybody who reflects on the life of St. Therese, the Little Flower, they want to talk about her little way. If you were to sum up what the little way was and how that spirituality was best summarized in her story of a soul, perhaps, what would you say the little way of St. Therese is?
Well, the little way is really good news, and it's what I think earned her canonization, because it's a spirituality we can all emulate, and I think it came from her, again, being that youngest and being small in stature. When she came into the convent, she was the youngest there, and she would have this breakthrough during her life as a religious where she was never going to, in her mind, be this great, like, for instance, St. Teresa of Avila, you know, that kind of thing. She was just little. What could she do? What could she do? And she realized she didn't have to do anything. She just had to be childlike, be and put herself in the arms of God and let him literally lift him up to herself. And so that is what the little way of spirituality is all about. It's becoming childlike, humble, you know, small, letting God lead, serving to others, you know, and not about leading and taking charge and being in control and doing these magnanimous things that so many of us say, well, we can't do that. No, we can all do the little way of spirituality. And truly, it when she wrote about it in her Story of a Soul, you can read it and say, I can do that. Everyone can do that. And that's why it's so popular today.
Absolutely. We're talking today about St. Therese of Lisieux and this 150th anniversary of her birth this year. And also, we just passed her feast day. So this is a great time to talk about the little flower. Now, when St. Therese was sick near the end of her life, she died at the age of 24 of tuberculosis. Through the work of her sisters, who were also a part of the convent as well, she got the permission to write down her spiritual reflections, which later were compiled, these manuscripts, into Story of a Soul, the famous autobiography of St. Therese. And as she's reflecting on her impending death and her life in heaven, she talks about the promise of a shower of heavenly roses. And that's, of course, the title of your book, Shower of Heavenly Roses, the book that you've written about these incredible intercessions that have happened in the lives of many faithful, even in modern times. What was the shower, or what is the shower of heavenly roses?
Right. This was an inspiration, as you said, as she was, approaching her death, where she didn't want to stop doing good works for God on earth. And she realized once she was free of the earth and her challenges physically that she had suffered with for so long, and she was in heaven, she would be free then to do all the things she wanted to do. She was always so contained by all her grand dreams of serving God in every possible way, you know. And she visualized herself as gathering these petals in heaven, because she just loved roses. They were in her courtyard, and she would gaze at them outside her window. She loved, you know, nature, and she loved the garden. What her dad used to take her in the garden when she was a child. She always had the love for nature and saw the world as a garden. But in heaven, she visualized herself taking these petals to God first for his blessing. Okay, this is, saints don't operate on their own up there. They go, they're channels of the Lord. They're conduits, but they don't call the shots up there. And she would go, and she would have in her mind, she said, I'll have these flowers blessed, and then I will shower them on earth to let people know she was still up there interceding, as all saints do, on our behalf, you know, at the foot of the throne of God. And as you said, this began a tradition, and you can really trace it back to a French priest named Father Pudigan, who was praying at her gravesite, and he was the one who started this novena of prayer to her. And on the ninth day of his novena, he had asked for a sign of a flower. He knew flowers were important to her, the rose, and sure enough, he received it. And this is where that tradition began. And it's remarkable, you know, we have to be careful, because we always walk that fine line. We don't want to be superstitious, right? We don't want to reduce poor Therese to an FTD florist that's going to deliver us flowers at our whim. Because there's so much she offers us to model. And
absolutely. We've been talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli about the Shower of Heavenly Roses, which is the name of the book of her book related to St. Therese of Lisieux, whose 150th anniversary of her birth is this very year. And also, this is the time of her feast day as well, from this past week. And on the program, Miracles of Roses, which debuts from EWTN, look for that next month here. We talk about the stories of St. Therese and the beginnings of her life, as was detailed by Elizabeth, and she appears as one of the interview subjects in this program. And so and when we talk about that, we highlight three cases of miraculous intercessions. There's a case of a woman who had kidney disease and who was completely cured. And we also talk about the case of a young child who was born. She had only a 5% chance of survival as a premature birth, and she survived through the intercession of Saint Therese. And we also talk about the remarkable meeting of two people, the Bonellos, in that episode as well. So it's a fun episode where we highlight some of these great intercessions of Saint Therese, and of course put a highlight on the life of Saint Therese, the little flower. And so people can be tuned in to that. Next month, I'll be announcing the air date on EWTN called Miracles of Roses. And we're so grateful to Elizabeth Ficicelli for her participation in that program as well. And so when we wrap up the program, as we wrap up the program today, we talk about Saint Therese as a great intercessor. We talk about her as someone, even the Pope references when he was asked, who are your favorite intercessors? He talks about the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Little Flower. Those are the two names that he threw out there recently. So even the Pope himself seeks out Saint Therese for her shower of heavenly roses. In this aftermath of her feast day, in this 150th year anniversary of her birth, why is Saint Therese considered to be such a great saint, and how can people turn to her intercession for miracles in their own lives?
Well, certainly, the second part of your question is we simply ask in prayer. We can call on any of the saints, and because they have been recognized by the Church that they're alive and up there in heaven, and they are our intercessors. So certainly just by simply turning in prayer, you don't have to do a formal 9-day or 54-day novena. You can. I mean, that's available as well. But turning your heart to them, reading about them so you understand their life. But Therese in particular models so many things that we can emulate: her humility and her childlikeness and her sincerity of heart and her drive to love God with every fiber of her being, you know, and always look for ways to serve him. So there's so many ways and opportunities that we can embrace her as a friend. And I think the fact that she was so young when she died, she's just so, again, readily accessible. I can't think of a better word than accessible for the Little Flower, because she was never pretentious, you know, and she just was always available to her sisters in the convent, to her family, and she's available to us as well.
Very well put. Well, we've been talking today with Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of the book Shower of Heavenly Roses, about some of these miraculous intercessions of Saint Therese. It's a great read. It's a classic book. You can find that at her website. Elizabeth, I'll cue you up. Where can people find out more about your writing and your speaking engagements?
Sure. Just at my website, elizabethficicelli.com.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Elizabeth Ficicelli, for joining us on today's program and talking to us about every one of everybody's favorite saints, Saint Therese of Lisieux. Thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks, Michael. God bless you, too.
And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Becca Corbell, the Associate Director of Programs at the St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Shrine and Museum, and Elizabeth Ficicelli, author of Shower of Heavenly Roses, talking to us about everybody's favorite modern saint, that's St. Therese of Lisieux. Check out tonight, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, Our Lady of Les Lots. I travel to Lots in France to look at those incredible apparitions happening in 1664 of Benedicta Rencarel, now a venerable on the path to sainthood. Check that one out for a very little known but highly approved Marian apparition case. And that's tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. Check out my latest book, Science and the Miraculous, How the Catholic Church Investigates the Supernatural. It's out from 10 books and available at ewtnrc.com. I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth a hunt. Talk to you next week.